Welcome to Buckets in the 503, a podcast just for the Oregon high school basketball hoop junkies. We're here to cover a lot of the basketball scene in the high school. We'll kind of recap what happened last season, as well as get into a lot of the transfers that happened out of 6A to 5A. And then we'll finish off with a great interview with the reigning 6A champion, first time ever, longest reigning head coach in high school, Tom Johnson. And with me with this podcast is Curtis Williams.
Hey, what's going on? It's Curtis Williams, current assistant coach at Benson High School for the last 7 years. Also run Cascade Kings AAU program. And this was Nawan's idea about putting together this podcast. We know a lot of people in Oregon are basketball junkies and like to talk about basketball all year round. We have a lot of hot topics that people don't get a chance to talk about. We'll talk about the transfer portal, player rankings, preseason predictions, college recruiting. Goal is just to keep everybody engaged and just, you know, talk about different hot topics that's going on in the community. Also, we'll be open to listener ideas once we get to that point. But today, you know, we just want to get the little pilot episode out the way and get everybody engaged.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and get into our first topic. Last season, Barlow won their first ever state championship, led by Tom Johnson. They had the great trio of Braden Barron, Jay Natkins, and Mason Bierbauer.
Mason Bierbauer, yeah.
Yeah, a three-headed monster that was just impossible to maintain once they got going. Talk a little bit about Braden's development as you had a chance to work with him, Curtis.
I actually had the Jalen, Mason, and Braden for AAU. I had Mason and Braden for 2 years. And Braden's just one of those late bloomer kids. That just came out of nowhere, played JV as a sophomore, and then junior year was first team all-league. Headed to Portland State, and so he actually got a chance to shine on the big stage, was MVP of the tournament. But he was also, you know, obviously they had veterans on his team. Jalen Atkins was a four-year starter, four-year all-state player. Also was the Gatorade Player of the Year for the state of Oregon his senior year. And then Mason was a three-year first team all league guy in the Mountain League, which is arguably one of the best leagues in the state. And then obviously you got the legendary coach Tom Johnson, has been around 39 years and well deserved. Got his first state championship. And then all three of those guys are all headed off to college. Mason's going to OIT, a great NAI program. Jalen Atkins is going to Biola, D2 in LA, and then Braden's going to Portland State, keeping it local. And so just watching all those kids' development and, you know, all the work they put into it to win their first state championship is just a good thing to see, from, especially when you've been around the kids for a couple of years straight.
Absolutely. It's always great to see the kids go off and then make it to the next level and everybody be following them. You know, last season, there's a lot of veteran teams out there who did a really good job of making it to the Child Center, some of the first time in a long time. Some people have been there for a little bit. Sprague is one of those teams that surprised a lot of people. They beat Oregon City to make it to the Child Center in a really tough game. Had one of their finer moments there. And then went on to the Child Center and surprised some people there as well. Talk about some of the kids that you work with on that Sprague team.
I've seen a couple of those kids over the years. You had the best kid. I think he's going to Lynn Benton. He had a great season. You had Jarrett Stanley. I think he was a co-player of the year along with the point guard. I think it's Braxton, I think, something like that. The point guard for Sprague and then Jarrett Stanley were the co-players of the year in the league. I think the point guard is going to Lynn Benton too, and Jarrett Stanley's going to Western Oregon, dynamic athlete. Sometimes being in Portland, you forget about the kids that are in Salem and other parts of the state. A lot of times we just focus on the Portland kids, but there's a lot of good kids all throughout the state. I mean, I just left the Prep Hoops Showcase and for the freshmen and sophomores, and there's a whole bunch of kids never even heard of, you know. So that's another reason why we're doing this podcast, so we can kind of put the shine on not only the Portland kids, but the other kids across the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the other veteran teams out there, you know, Westview was a huge veteran-led team. Led by Kai, and also
James Kefkin, Jason Grady. I mean, I think they had, what, 7, 8, 9 seniors on that team?
Yes. Yeah, they had a lot of great seniors on that team, beating Tualatin in that first round in an epic matchup, you know, playing out of their mind. Did a great job in that one to finish off in the fifth place last year. Also, another team that did really well, that kind of caught fire at the end of the season, was Jesuit. Jesuit did a great job. I think Patrick Kilfoyle led that team, and Isaac Bongan caught fire in those final games to end out his career as a Jesuit Crusader. Talk a little bit about them and their special run at the Child Center.
Well, Jesuit being an 11 seed, is very rarely does a double-digit seed to make the Child Center, let alone the state championship game. And so as 11 seed, I mean, that's just, you know, it shows their program and their coaching. They went on a nice little run. The end of the season, I think a couple weeks before the playoffs even started, they might have been like in the 20s as far as rankings. So just seeing them catch fire, go on a run, just knows, you know, as long as you play team ball, you can go as far as you want. I mean, Jesuit probably has arguably the most basketball history in the state. I mean, their coach has more state championships than anybody else. So, I mean, it's a real respected program. As you can see when you walk in the gym, you see all the banners.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a tough place to play. It always feels a little bit eerie when you walk in that gym and try and get a win. You know, feels like a little bit of favoritism every time you go there.
Oh, man. Lots of, as a player at Jesuit, as a coach, as a fan, the first time I won against Jesuit was maybe the state championship game as a fan rooting for Barlow.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever won in that gym. I've beat Jesuit a couple of times, but never, I don't think I've ever got a win in that gym yet. So looking forward to that at some point in time. Some other teams that tend to seem to be mainstays at the Child Center, you have Tualatin, led by Bubba, who's the head coach over there. He's done a great job over there. And then you have would also consider the Lake family running the show over there at Tualatin for the last, what, 7 years, it feels like.
It's like too long.
But they've done a hell of a job. Shout out to them, running a hell of a job over there at Tualatin. And now Jamai Lake is the clear number one player, probably in Oregon. Maybe it's arguable, but I would give my vote.
Yeah, definitely huge spring and summer for Jamai. We'll talk about that in probably the next episode, but he's definitely probably one of the favorites for Oregon Player of the Year this season coming up. I think he picked up close to what, 8 to 10 D1 offers this summer. So he's going to probably be a top three preseason team. He'll probably be close to the favorite to win that award.
No, absolutely. They're a team who went there last year, but they tend to be returning their top two guards, Paviola and Junior, arguably the best backcourt in state. They're going to look to make a huge run this time. I know they have their eyes on being first team all state and making a huge run in their conference. Also returning back, Wes Lynn, who did a really good job last year. Looks like they maximized their guys in their program last year. Had really two good in Benson. Trey did a great job over there. Trey Price.
Gavin Gross had a big year. Yes. Big year. He's going to, I forgot the name of the college he's going to. He's going to NAI school, but he had a huge year. I think they had 8 seniors last year. And then, you know, sometimes the transfer portal bites everybody. And this time I got Wes Lynn. So I know their starting point guard, Trey Price, is 2027 kid. He's planning on moving to California to attend Matter Day his junior year. So they'll definitely be a different team. But as you can see, a lot of these teams that we got all have the same thing in common. Most of these teams are all senior-led, which is typically common in Child Center teams.
Yes. Last year was their coach's first year coaching that team. So it'll be interesting to see how he turns it around this year and develops that group. I know that JV team was really good last year, but we'll see how it transfers to the varsity level going into next year. Southridge is another team who made it to the Elite Eight. That's, you know, if anybody knows, I'm a homer on that team right there. And I think they are poised to probably make another run again. They've been there 2 years in a row. Unfortunately, having a tough time getting out of that first round.
We got to get Southridge to win a game with the Child Center.
Got to get away that Child Center, man. It's been Achilles heel being number 8. But nonetheless, doing a great job of just trying to stay in the top of the mountain in the Oregon 6A class. for the last couple of years, and also got a transfer writer, Zayden. Unfortunately, we lost a couple great seniors, Keenan Recamp, who's down at Bucknell, and he was the MVP, co-MVP last year for the Metro. We also lost Alonzo Hoff, who greatly be missed, but I think we're going to retool and revamp and be pretty good going to next season. I think we have a pretty good core coming back.
Yeah, Ryder. Ryder's a huge pickup for you guys. Ryder's in 6'9", power forward, coming from Central Catholic, played AU with me this past spring and summer. Nice touch. He's probably, I mean, I'd be shocked if he doesn't get first team all league in the Metro this year. And also, I know Naywan doesn't want to talk about his son, but his son has made leaps and bounds this spring and summer, working on his game. So, I mean, he's definitely identifying himself as one of the top point guards in the state, regardless of class this year. So, I mean, I'd say Upsala is definitely probably a preseason top three team.
Yeah, we're looking to make some waves. But, you know, the perennial favorite, always on top, generally. You know, you talk about the transfer portal. This must be the transfer portal king of schools when we talk about Central Catholic. no one gets more transfers than this school right here. They just seem to reload every single year. And the talent they have this year is, you know, probably second to none, probably preseason number one favorites. Last year, you know, they went into the tournament number three. Didn't end too well for them, but I only imagine that just adds fuel for the fire going into this year.
Yeah, Central Catholic lost two D1 players, Isaac Carr, first-team All-State, headed to Wake Forest, great career. Also lost Deuce Pascal, headed to Weber State. But they, you know, they're still loaded. I mean, they picked up a couple of players. They also lost a couple of players, though. I mean, so I think their top seven is probably better than everybody else's this year coming in. You got Bam Pascal looking to come back. He was injured last year. I mean, some could say were definitely probably the favorites to win it if he was healthy. You got Robbie Long, QB1, they call him at Central Catholic, quarterback, but also a combo guard for Central Catholic, the poise guy under control. You got Donovan Miller, shooter, 6'6" shooter, Donovan Miller. Pretty good. And then you got a couple transfers. You got Caden Wilson, a dynamic 2027 kid coming from Seton Catholic out of Vancouver. You also have another kid, Malcolm Witherspoon, another kid who's first team all league at Mountain View High School in Vancouver last year. And then one that's close to Naywan, Isaac Bongan, was first team all tournament last year for Jesuit, also is going to Central Catholic. So they'll definitely be loaded. You got Jalen Nicholson coming back. Jalen Nicholson started for them probably half the games last year, 6'6", can shoot the ball, athletic. And so I spent a lot of time around some of the kids, Central Catholic this year. I got to know Donovan and Robbie Long and Jalen Nicholson. But, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, they also lost a couple kids, though. They lost two 2028 kids, Leo and Carter Lockhart. Both of those kids moved on to Nelson. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes.
And Nelson was, you know, they did a great job last year. They tied for the league championship. I think it's the first one in school history last year. Unfortunately, they ran into a buzzsaw in Jesuit going into the Child Center. But they're looking to make a huge run. The addition of Carter Lockhart is going to be huge for them. Braylon Gaines is on pace to be, you know, the best player in Oregon this season. And so, you know, it's going to be a real shootout over there in that conference with Nelson, Clackamas reloaded, getting serious. He transferred over from Roosevelt. Roosevelt had a big year last year as well, because of Sirius. And now he's going over and taking his talents over to Clackamas, with RJ Bonham, who, broke the record for 3 points made in a season. So a lot of firepower happening in that conference.
You know, a lot of things, you know, we're going to cry. Right now, we're just reviewing last season, but we're going to cover a variety of topics each episode. A lot of hot topics that's going to maybe stir up some listeners and viewers. So, with that being said, we got Tom Johnson here, the legendary coach from Barlow High School. You can go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us a little about how long you've been coaching and stuff.
Thank you, Curtis. I've been at Barlow for 39 years. I coached 3 years as a head coach at Lebanon, so this will be my, I finished my 42nd year as a head coach. Obviously, the 39 years at Barlow have been great. They've been great years. People ask me why I continue to do it. Two reasons. We've got a great coaching staff. We've got great kids. And our community supports us really, really well. So I'm really fortunate in that regard.
We definitely want to congratulate you. Me and Tom got close the past couple of years. I had a couple of his key players played AU basketball with me, so we've been communicating a lot over the last couple of years. What do you think were some of the keys to you guys winning state championship this past year?
Well, certainly talent. You know, we honestly, I felt like we had the most talent in the state, especially with, you know, Braden Barron, Jalen Atkins, and Mason Bierbauer. We had three kids that could score in a multiple, in a variety of ways. But I think more than anything, the experience and what we went through to get there. You know, we made it to the semifinals 2 years ago, ended up getting beat by Tualatin. And then the year before, when those kids were juniors, we made it to the quarterfinals, got beat again by Tualatin. And I really think that, you know, you learn a whole lot more from losses than you do wins. And I think that that kind of galvanized our guys the summer before their senior year. You know, all three of those kids were really talented. With talent comes a little bit of an ego. And you know, I don't think of ego as a bad thing. I want my kids to think that they're good and to be confident as players. In order for us to really be successful this last year, we needed each of those guys to give a little bit more and to be a little bit more sacrificial in the way that they played. And I think that with their maturity that they certainly showed that. So, you know, I just give those kids all the credit in the world, not only them, but the entire group that we had an opportunity to work with.
Yeah. Watching your team from the outside, you know, it seemed like the beginning of the season, it wasn't really a well-oiled machine. I mean, granted, you guys had the most talent out there. But it seemed like, you know, it was kind of your turn, my turn type of thing.
Yeah.
But as the season went on, you know, looking from the outside, it was like, uh-oh, I think they're starting to figure it out. What was that turning point for you guys during the season where everything started to kind of click?
You know, actually, it was, you know, it's such a process. And I think one of the things that I've learned over the years at being an experienced coach is that it really doesn't matter how you play in December. And I kept telling our guys that you know, because you're right. We at times looked a little bit dysfunctional early in the season. But I just kept talking about us staying with the process and making sure that we get better each week. I think probably, you know, we lost to Jesuit and Schwab, then we won our next three games. But then we went on the road to Tualatin and had maybe our best game up to that point, beat a really, really good Tualatin team. And I think our kids really started to understand that, you know, if we do just a few things a little bit better, we're going to be successful.
Yeah, I remember talking to you after the first game you guys played at Westview, and I was like, you know, I was like, and you were just like, well, Curtis, relax, it's just December. And I was like, man, they just got to play better, man. It's the last year. But we talk about the big three a lot. What were some of the other unsung heroes that on your team that sometimes don't get enough credit into your guys' championship? Right? I mean, every team has to have, you know, role players and.
Right. Let me go back to that game at Westview. I never won. It doesn't really matter how you start. What matters is how you finish. And so that was kind of one of our themes that, you know, we know that we have the talent to get there. We just got to finish. So, okay, back to your original question. Well, without a doubt, Blake Hills. Blake Hills is absolutely vital to the success that we had this year. You don't win without kids like him. He took charges. He got on the floor for loose balls. He was a defensive stopper. And when he, when certain teams would take away Mason, Jalen, and Braden, he would step up, and that was evident in the championship game against Jesuit. So he obviously was a huge, huge factor for us during the season. And then Madden Cummings, our sophomore point guard, had a, you know, he just plays with a level of confidence and an experience that most sophomores don't play with. And so his play was instrumental, especially in the championship game as well. And then Maddox Young and Silas Gentry are two guys off the bench. They didn't play a whole lot, but they would, you know, sometimes you want guys off the bench. They don't necessarily need to help you, but we just don't want them to hurt us. And that was one of the things that they would go in. They would go in and they wouldn't hurt us. Maddox would knock down a shot. Silas were very good defensively and taking care of the ball. And then Caleb Perry off the bench as well had some good moments for us.
Nice. Now, early you talked about, you know, your players and you liking them having a little bit of ego to their game, which, you know, obviously breeds a lot of confidence. But how do you go about managing, you know, all the egos on the team? I'm pretty sure everybody thought they were the man with your big three. And so how did you go about managing those egos and building that team chemistry and adding in those role players to understand what everybody's role was?
A lot of meetings. A lot of meetings. We started meeting the summer before. I would get together with basically the four seniors, Blake, Mason, Braden, and Jalen. And we would talk. And so we met frequently, and I would continue to try to reinforce the things that they did well and the things that they needed to do better to help us be successful. And then during the course of the season, we would meet often on Sunday afternoons, the four of us. And I only, you know, some people say, well, why would you only meet with those four and not the whole team? Because those guys were instrumental. I needed to make sure that the four of them and myself were on the same page. And, you know, really the best teams are the teams that are led by the athletes themselves. And I wanted to make sure that they knew I gave them a lot of ownership during the course of the season and that I trusted them all four of those guys I trusted. And that was, you know, that was relayed during the course of the season in our meetings and so forth.
Nice. Now, what's one lesson that you learned from last season that you'll go and take forward with you into this season?
I think maybe just exactly that you know, I've always tried to pride myself on being a player's coach. In other words, if I were a player in high school, would I want to play for me? So trying to make sure that I give kids ownership and allow them to lead, that's one of the biggest things that, you know, we live in a society right now where when we were kids would go out and we'd play our own games. We'd get together, we'd pick our own teams, we'd play our own games. We'd have to manage and manage our own games. And now it seems like everything's run by adults, whether it's parents, AAU coaches, or whatever. And I think one of the things that has happened is kids aren't in a position where they have to lead. And I want to make sure that I give kids opportunities to lead. And I want to make sure that they know that I listen to their voices. Now, I can't listen to everybody's voice, obviously. But I always think that it's important that you listen to your better players a little bit.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about leading, right, and giving those players a structure, what type of things do you specifically do to give them that platform to lead? And how do the other players take that from the players that you've chosen to be the leaders of the team?
Well, we've always, I've always depended on, you know, interestingly enough, I've always tried to depend on my seniors to lead a little bit. But going back 2 and 3 years ago, since Jalen, Braden, and Mason were such impact players as young players, that made that a little bit difficult. But one of the things I do is I will give them opportunities to make decisions on things that maybe I don't think are all that important, but they might. For example, what do you want to do for warmups? Okay. We're gonna scrimmage today. Jalen, you and Braden, you guys pick teams. I let them, you know, do their own things. And then we also, I also sometimes will say to them, hey, this is what I expect out of you. I expect you to pick this player up today in practice. I want to make sure that you're vocal with this player on our team to get them going, be positive with them and so forth. So just reminders of things like that.
Oh, one quick question. What advice would you give other coaches that are chasing titles or trying to build a winning program?
Everybody asks, well, would ask me a question, is your goal to win state? That you guys got a chance to win state? What is that, your goal to win state? That really, we really never talked about it. We talked about, I think what's most important is the day to day, what you do day to day. That don't get it. One of the things, and this started about 3 years ago with us, when we had already cinched the conference title, we were two or three games away from the playoffs, and my big thing is, hey, here and now is what's important. Here and now, let's get better today than we were yesterday. So I know that everybody's got goals. They want to win state, or they want to win league, or they want to, but really those are goals you really don't have control over. What goals you have control over is, okay, I'm going to get up 1,500 shots on a shootaway this week, or I'm going to spend a half hour, 3 days a week working on only ball handling, or I'm going to make sure that I do my weight workout. Those are goals that you can achieve. To set out goals, I heard the great Kobe Bryant in a podcast not too long ago talking. They asked him this question, are you a guy that hates to lose or loves to win? He says, neither. He says, if you're a guy that hates to lose, then you are going to be, if you lose, you're going to be crushed. If you're a guy that loves to win and you lose, you're still going to be crushed. He goes, I want to learn from my experiences, and I want to learn how to get better day after day. And so when I heard that, it made me a little bit cognizant of the fact that what's important is here and now. And that's one of the things that there was another documentary I watched on both Kobe and Michael Jordan. And one of the things that I can't remember who it was that worked with them both said was, they, more than any other two athletes, have the ability to stay in the present. They don't get ahead of themselves, and they don't think about the past. They are present at all times. And I just think that's something that that I want to make sure I remind our kids about a lot.
I remember when you got interviewed after you won state, I think the person interviewing you asked you if your career, I don't remember what I'm talking about, where they asked you about your career being complete because you won a state championship, or you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and I Curtis, I never felt like I needed to win it. Oh, I need to win a state championship. We are so inundated with winning in our society that we fail to realize the most valuable lessons are learned in the event itself, the game itself. You know, that, very few of these kids will, 3% of all high school basketball players play collegiately at any level. Less than 1% of high school players play at the Division I level. And obviously the chances of playing professionally are very small. And I know the kids all want to do that, but what's most important is that we prepare them for the next step in life outside of athletics. And I think in some ways in recent years, that's kind of been put on the back burner. I want to make sure kids are when they leave our program, they're better adjusted to handle the pressures of the world that they're going to face.
No, absolutely. For yourself, coaching for 42 years, 39 at Barlow, entering in your 40th season. For yourself, how do you keep evolving as a coach to kind of keep it fresh? I mean, over 40 years, you've probably seen different styles of players. As we know, after COVID, kids kind of changed on behavioral, how they behave and that sort of stuff. And so for yourself, how do you evolve as a coach to kind of keep up with the times and stay a player coach?
One of the things I always tell myself is I want to be able to do one thing better next year than we did this year. Several years ago, I wanted to get a shootaway. So we fundraised for a shootaway. I wanted to get a summer league going in June many years ago with our current players and our grads. So we got that going 1 year. A couple of years ago, I needed an assistant coach, and I was able to get Todd Nagel, who was a former head coach at Gresham and athletic director there. And so every year I want to try to get better at some area as a coach, or certainly improving our program in some way. So I think, Yeah, you've always got to be moving forward. I always believe you've got to be moving forward. Actually, this last week I met with all the kids that are potentially varsity kids and had a written evaluation for each of them, spent time talking with them and encouraging them and so forth. So it's one of the things we did this last summer.
Yeah, very few people could go through life and I have somebody negative to say about somebody. And Tom Johnson, my experience is one of those guys that when he won a state championship, everybody was happy. You know, nobody said anything negative about him. And I know you mentioned the ego, but I mean, my experience with Tom has been great for the past 2 years. And I mean, one time he asked me for advice on a game. And I'm like, you've been coaching longer than I've been alive.
Good coaches steal. The good coaches steal from other good coaches. And so, you know, I spent time, the last two spring breaks, I've been in India vacationing. And Chris Knutson, the football coach, is down there. He coached 33 years of football at Centennial. And I said to him, what are you doing tomorrow morning? He goes, oh, nothing. I go, well, you have coffee? He said, sure. He goes, I go, but do me a favor. Come with the three best things you've ever done for your football program and share them with me if you would. And he did, and man, I got a lot out of him. I got a lot out of him. Hey, coaches should steal from each other. And I'm gonna ask you. Yeah.
All right, last question. How do you feel about today's culture in Oregon high school basketball? What are some things you like, and what are some things that you don't? The one thing that you like, and one thing that you don't like.
Very good question. One thing that I like how opportunities have expanded for kids to play basketball in the state of Oregon and with good people like yourself and the AAU program. I don't like, I guess for lack of a better word, the lack of professionalism sometimes within our sport. I think coaches should be more professional in the way they address their the officials in particular. And you know what? I'm not going to sit here and say that I never yell at an official or anything like that. But I mean, we've had some issues where in the last couple of summers where coaches have gone fist to fist with each other in a summer league game, and yelling and screaming at each other. And you know, we should be role models for young athletes in the way we conduct ourselves and the way we behave. So, but you know what? I have great respect for all high school coaches. It's not an easy job. You combine the administrations you have to deal with and the parental pressure. And basketball is the cruelest of all sports because you can only play five. And you got a school of 2,500 kids and you can only play five kids at a time. That makes it tough. But you know, I look back at my playing career. I was in every conceivable role as a player. I was one of the better players in high school, and I was one of the worst players 1 year in college, where I did not get off the bench at all. And you know, I wouldn't trade that season of sitting on the bench for anything. I learned a whole lot during that season, and that's the thing that we need to make sure we emphasize with kids is that, you know, this is you are taking a risk. You're going to risk and you get cut. You're not going to play. You're not going to start. How you handle those things is what's really most important. So,
nice. Well, we appreciate your words of wisdom. you know, some of the things that you said might have cut a little bit deep. Not yelling at officials because I know myself have probably been teed up a couple too many times.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting. I worry about the future of officiating in the state of Oregon. We had a tournament last summer and we had three games going at once. We had six referees show up to do the games and all six of the referees were between 65 and 84, all six of them. And I'm thinking, where are the young officials that are going to take their place? So we need to make sure that, we show a little bit of appreciation for those guys. So.
No, absolutely. As a guy who kind of helps out with officials here and there, it's hard to get the young guys because, they come in and they're expected, you know, by the fans
right.
and the coaches to be great immediately, right? And so there is no learning curve for them and they get booted out because everybody's like, this guy's terrible.
Yeah.
So, well, he's starting out. You got to learn somewhere and cut your teeth, right? And so
yeah.
That's the hard part for the young officials, on top of, you know, the guys who are the good officials in the high school ranks want to keep that status a little bit. So
right.
It's hard for guys to move up. So kind of have a double-edged sword for those new guys, but we're trying to get those new guys in the system. Well, one last bonus question for you. There can only be five. Who is Barlow's top five players in the history, according to Tom Johnson?
That's a mighty loaded question. Only five? That's all you want?
Only five. I'll let you have some honorable mentions, though.
Okay. Well, first of all, I used to always tell people that Freddie Jones is the best player ever coached and everybody else is second, but along with Freddie would be Jared Price, who was a year older than Freddie, our point guard. The 2 years that Jared was our point guard, we were 32-0 in league, and played for the state championship his junior year, and the third place game his senior year. So Freddie Jones, Jared Price, Jesse White, of course, who scored 2,000 points in his career at Barlow, one of 12 people, I think, in the whole state of Oregon. Jalen Atkins, who also scored 2,000 points, and probably Braden Barron. There's a lot of honorable mention guys. Kid by the name of Nick Klinger was a great, great shooter for us back in the early 2000s. Jordan Schmidt was a very, very good player for us. My son, Drew Johnson, was a very good point guard. Mason Bierbauer recently. So those are kind of my honorable mentions. I'm sure I'm missing some probably big names. Evan Inglesby be another one. But I will leave with this. I have had an opportunity to coach some great, great kids over the years. And there's a correlation between those kids getting in the gym. And Freddie would call me at 10 o'clock at night to get in the gym. So would Jared Price. And those kids are grinders. And I am in debt to all those kids for their effort over the years.
We appreciate you coming on the podcast for our first one. We wish you well this season, except for against our teams. but yeah, that'll do it as a wrap for Buckets in the 503.